medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
People of the world, let's get together.
Hello and welcome to Clear Conscience Pet Talk on the All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. This is your host, Anthony Benny, and we are tremendously excited for today's program, something I've been waiting for a long time, and that's the ability to connect with my guest, Dr. Alan Schoen. Alan is someone who has had an influence over the entire practice of veterinary medicine that is so huge that it's really even hard to put a value on it. The fact is that Alan is one of the earliest people in this movement that understood the importance of integrating veterinary, natural, and alternative medicine with conventional veterinary medicine for the best possible outcome for animals. So this is a kind of like having Benjamin Franklin here to talk about electricity. So Alan, are you there? Are you with me?
Joy to be with you. Thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, well, again, a huge privilege for us to have you, and especially with your busy schedule, to set aside time from out there in beautiful Salt Spring Island out in the Puget Sound and to, take the time to communicate with us and our listeners about the past, the present, and the future of holistic and integrative veterinary care. So, Alan, I just want people to, have a kind of a sense of your background in a quick kind of summary, and if you wouldn't mind, just tell us when you started practicing veterinary medicine and when the concept of integrative and natural and holistic medicine all started to come together for you.
Well, Anthony, I was actually quite blessed to be able to go to Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine and get a great foundation in conventional medicine and surgery there, and that was way back in 1978. And from there, my vision was to be like a James Herriot, all things great and small, creatures great and small. And so I went off to practice in New Hampshire in the largest veterinary practice in southern New Hampshire at the time, and where we were treating dogs, cats, horses, sheep, goats, pigs, alpacas. You never knew what the day would bring. And I had a few years there practicing the absolute best of conventional medicine and surgery there, and had that opportunity. And then I also saw the limitations of conventional medicine and surgery at the time, thinking, God, there are too many animals here that I'm left with either having to euthanize or having them live in pain. And I said, there must be a better way. And even in veterinary school at Cornell, there was one veterinarian who had just gone to China when they just opened the doors to China and was getting exposed to veterinary acupuncture. And then I moved to upstate New York and was practicing there and got exposed to veterinary acupuncture through some continuing education. And at that time, there were only like 30 or 50 veterinarians in North America doing it. And as soon as I listened to this seminar, the light bulb went on inside of me saying, my gosh, this is applied neurophysiology. And my master's degree was in animal behavior and neurophysiology before veterinary school.
Wow.
So I realized that what a great opportunity. You could actually use acupuncture to help these animals. And I started doing it, and one by one, they were getting better and improving. And then at that time, the Animal Medical Center, which was the largest, most prestigious animal hospital in the world, it was in New York City, they heard about what I was doing, and they invited me to come down there and say, why don't you give a talk on this? And the head of it was quite visionary and said, wow, this is the first time that acupuncture has been explained based on science. And why don't we try doing a pilot program here? And the ironic thing was a lot of the vets there were not very open to it. So they said, let's do a study where we'll do everything we can with Western medicine and surgery, and when they can't work anymore, we'll recommend either euthanasia or they can try acupuncture by you. And I thought, well, that's okay, that's good control, you know.
Yeah,
and
really,
I didn't take on every case, but the ones that I thought I could help, we started treating, and we published on it, and 78% of those animals that were recommended for euthanasia all improved and were able to live a longer, quality, pain-free, happier life. Well, that being the largest referral center in the world at that time, the word spread through the interns and residents there that went off to other veterinary schools and other referral centers, and the word spread that, oh my gosh, acupuncture does indeed work and it needs to be part of conventional medicine and surgery. And once that door opened, then I started exploring what other options are there to help, and studied Chinese herbs, Western herbs, nutrition, nutritional supplements, the importance of good quality food, physical therapy, chiropractic, osteopathy. And so I started developing this integrative approach. And back then, the word integrative wasn't really used. It was the words that were used, the terminology then were holistic or alternative, which then eventually evolved into complementary. And then, and actually in 1998, when I edited the very first textbook on complementary and alternative veterinary medicine, I wanted to call it integrative, but the publisher said, no, that term is too new. We don't even know what that is yet. And later on, it evolved into the word integrating, where you go beyond labels of alternative or complementary, and you go, everything should be integrated and do whatever is absolutely best for all the animals under our care. And sometimes that includes, you know, includes conventional medicine, surgery, as well as all these other complementary therapies, and developing a whole new integrative approach, using them in combination to do whatever is best to help our animal friends be as healthy and happy as they can possibly be.
And that was all before 1980?
That was in 1998. That was
in 98.
Progression went from 1981 till 1998. And
so
at that time, I became, after publishing, editing other books, the first textbook on veterinary acupuncture on the scientific basis of that, and the books I did for the public, like Love, Miracles, and Animal Healing. And my goal there was to provide the science of this to the veterinarians and then to explain the practical applications of that to clients so that they could be aware of the benefits of it. And then at that point, then I became a professor, an assistant clinical professor at Colorado State University Veterinary School and Tufts Veterinary School, and was teaching an elective course at Cornell, and was teaching at conferences all over the world and veterinary schools all over the world. And my goal then was to be more like the Johnny Appleseed, planting the seeds all over that, hey, this is really exciting. There's so many different ways to help our animals heal besides just drugs and surgery. And it isn't that drugs and surgery are bad. It's just we have to have a more expansive, broader view of what healing is.
And let's stop right there, if we can, Alan. We need to take a quick break, if you don't mind. It's just so great to hear the story being told, because it really affects everything we're doing with our animals today. So when we come back, we're going to really talk about a little bit about the difference between conventional veterinary medicine and integrative holistic veterinary medicine, and get a little bit more into the practicalities of what a patient, a person bringing their animal can expect when dealing with professionals in these disciplines. So if you can hang with us, you're here for the whole program, and we're so thrilled about that. So we'll be back in a minute on Clear Conscience Pet Radio on the All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network.
Amazing taste is in my bowl. With super gravy now. Oh. I thought dinner was dull, but now I'm howling wild.
Ow!
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. Proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting and very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924.
People of the world, let's get together. Let's all make this world a better place.
Welcome back to Clear Conscience Pet Radio on the All Paul's Pet Talk Radio Network. And we're here today with our very special guest, Dr. Alan Schoen. By the way, you can find Alan online. And Alan, what is the website, the best way for people to find you on the net so they can, because your website is very informative, and I'd like people to be able to get there look more deeply into the wonderful
enough,
work that you do.
It's drschoen.com, drschoen.com.
Beautiful. You can't go wrong with that. Go to drschoen.com, and I'm on the homepage right now, and I think you'll find it's a really easy, flowing website. It's got really good information on the background and Dr. Schoen's books, as well as his current practice and some of the amazing things that he's doing on a daily basis. So when we left off, you had given us a wonderful introduction, a kind of a really rapid 20-year journey. Thank you for making that happen so quickly. That's a great skill. I mean, you took us from 78 when you pretty much got out of vet school to almost the year 2000. Ooh, the year 2000, when these things had developed into such a much greater part of the veterinary practice in our country and around the world. And what I would like to focus on a little bit, because we're always trying to give people practical takeaways and make this time as valuable as we possibly can for our listeners, of course, and our hosts and our guests. So when you talk about an alternative, integrative, holistic, there's all these terms to get thrown around, and let's try to define them a little bit at least. Like, what do you consider to be a holistic or alternative veterinarian? What are the hallmarks or the characteristics of that type of veterinary practice versus what we would consider a conventional approach to veterinary medicine today?
That's a great question, Anthony. To summarize it, I would say that the difference is a reductionistic perspective on health and healing to a more expansive, integrative, holistic approach. And what I mean by that is, in conventional medicine, we're trained, okay, here is the box, here's the diagnosis, and then here's the drug to treat that, or here's the surgery to treat that, and then the drug or the surgery is the whole answer. From a holistic perspective and an integrative approach, you try to look at, gee, what caused the particular condition or the particular problem, and is there a way to, if it's an ongoing chronic issue, is there a way to correct that with the proper nutrition, the proper exercise, a proper program that brings the animal back not just to a functional state, but to an optimal state of health? And then what else can you do to accelerate the healing if they do need surgery? What can you do pre-op, before surgery, and after surgery to help accelerate the healing and help the animal be as healthy and happy as possible? And that would include things like good nutrition, possibly acupuncture, various forms of physical therapy. Now there are new approaches like low-level laser therapy, which I had written about in my textbook in 1998, but now there are newer, more advanced laser approaches that can help accelerate healing. And doing that whole approach, besides the positive, one of the things that I'm working on a lot now is developing mind-body medicine approaches for human companions and human caretakers, that the impact of our own thoughts, our own feelings, our own heart and mind on the health and happiness of our animals, and that that is a full circle, so that they bring us such joy and happiness, we can bring them joy and happiness, and that the foundation, the holistic integrative foundation, is based on, very simply, the right nutrition, good thoughts, good heart and healthy heart and mind, and good exercise program. And that is good for both of us, for all of us.
Well, when I recontacted you after, you know, we've been friends for many years through a lot of mutual friends here out east and just in our industry in general, those of us who are kind of on the, at least I'd like to think on the good side, the side of trying to find solutions that work for animals and their human guardians. And when I what triggered me to recontact you was an article in Integrative Veterinary Journal or whatever the magazine, I'm sorry, is called, but it's a fairly new magazine. But you had written about the mind-body connection, and I found it so compelling, and it, you know, it's, it forced my fingers to go right to the keyboard and find you, and it's been great to renew our dialogue together. But I really want to get into mind-body medicine maybe in the next segment. But while we're talking about, first of all, I want to tell folks that Alan was fighting a bit of a cold, and he's been a real trooper to come and do the interview today. So if you hear any scratchiness in his throat, it's because I forced him to do this when he probably should have been resting. So thank you so much for still doing it with us, Alan. Now, when you said reductionistic, it really triggered something in me because I just recently had an experience, and I'd like to bring things to the practical sometimes. I think it's really helpful to have, you know, direct examples. And a friend who lost their dog and then had to go on a trip really quickly afterwards, and it was just an unavoidable thing, apparently, and, you know, left her dog to board with someone. And while she was gone, she found out that her other dog started to get sick, and they said it was a reactivation of Lyme. The dog had Lyme in its body, and as we know, that's there with you forever, at least that's what they say. And all of a sudden, they were talking about this dog being in dire straits, being in kidney failure, and they were talking about putting this dog down while this friend, this woman, was in on a cruise ship in, you know, somewhere out there in the ocean. So when I heard about all this, I was like kind of shocked as to the rapid decline that this other animal, who I hadn't even heard about because I had just dealt with the death of her other animal as a friend and just tried to be supportive and kind and connect her with an animal communicator to soothe her grief. But what I found out just this morning was that the vet that she's dealing with said to her, well, you know, I think that the dog is out of the woods. You know, we're on the doxycycline, on this heavy dosage of this, and, you know, we're going to try to get the dog home. But remember, when you bring him home, that he has to be on a very low protein diet. And when I heard that, I just about, like, you know, jumped through the phone. And here I'm in a horrible position because I'm a nutrition person, you know, who's a self-taught nutritionist. I don't have the PhD. I have 23 years of feeding animals and helping to formulate products. And I realize that the vet is going on an assumption that if a dog has stressed kidneys, that too much protein will overstress those kidneys. But telling a layperson to feed low protein to a dog, I believe, is a recipe for weakness and failure to thrive, because the dog that doesn't get adequate dietary protein, especially from animal protein sources, in my opinion, is not going to have their optimum health. And now we're kind of up against another break, but if you just give me your response to that before we go on our next break, and I'm not trying to put you in a position to second guess another vet. I know that's tricky, but I just want to know your opinion on that type of thinking, and is that an example of minimalistic or reductionistic versus holistic thinking?
Oh, Anthony, that question is so vast, okay?
And it is a sorry.
No, it is a difference between reductionistic versus holistic, and it's inappropriate for me to even second guess another veterinarian because I don't know all the details there, and I, you know, I don't do anything like that. The debate, there is an ongoing debate in veterinary medicine with kidney disease about low protein versus high protein versus the quality of the protein.
Yes, and thank you. Quality.
And quality, I think, is really one of the biggest issues.
Well, you would be so proud of me, Alan, because I texted her and I said, it's about the right amount of high-quality protein, not about some, you know, just slash-and-burn philosophy. Now, Alan, I'm so sorry. We're going to take a quick break and come back. And I really appreciate that answer, but let's jump back in a few moments. And everyone, we have Dr. Alan Schoen, the creator of Integrative Holistic Veterinary Medicine, and really one of the absolute true pioneers of what I consider to be the very, very finest approach to veterinary care that we can offer our animals. So we're here with Dr. Schoen, and we'll be back in 1 minute on Clear Conscience Pet Talk Radio.
Your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo lick it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it. For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Welcome back to Clear Conscience Pet Radio on the All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. And we're here with our amazing guest today, Dr. Alan Schoen, who I'm privileged to call a friend. And someone who I've admired and really literally studied with, unbeknownst to him, in terms of reading and learning from Alan in my earlier years in animal nutrition. But not to make Alan seem older than me, we're pretty close to the same age. I just started a little later in the game than Alan did. So welcome back, Alan.
Oh, great to be with you, Anthony. You're asking such great questions, and you're doing such great, great work from the nutrition perspective and with your radio show. So thank you.
Oh, that's beyond gracious, and coming from you, very humbling. Thank you so much, Alan. And I'm sorry if folks hear me calling you Alan, you know, not doing the Dr. Schoen thing. It's just kind of hard to do that when, you know, we relate to each other on such a, you know, a collegial basis. So, and I'll tell you folks that Alan is not the type of person that, if he were practicing and you walked into his office, Alan's practice is very complex these days. It's not really bound to a location, but he's not the kind of person that stands tall in ceremony. He's the kind of person that just wants to help your animal get the job done and be your friend as well. So when we left off, we were talking about this approach to kidney disease or kidney failure. I get a lot of folks who email me because they're looking for things they can feed their animals if they're in what they kind of refer to as near kidney failure or low efficiency kidney operation. What's the deal with all these kidney problems out there, Alan? What's your take on that? It seems like pancreatitis and kidney issues seem to have really come to the fore in the last few years, or at least I'm hearing about them more. Is there some trend there that we need to be aware of, or is it just a diagnostic emphasis? What's your take on that?
All of the above.
Okay.
It's number one, we're able to make better diagnoses in Western medicine these days, where we have much better diagnostic tests and ultrasound and just where, you know, conventional veterinary medicine, the diagnostics have improved so much that we're better able to understand and catch some things earlier. So that's number one. Number two is the causes are so vast because, you know, especially gastrointestinal, we're just seeing almost a pandemic of inflammatory bowel disease.
And, oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, and so, and a lot of kidney and GI, I think, you know, my personal opinion, the bottom line is it's inflammation and it's an immune-mediated reaction. And we're seeing this in both humans and all animals is our bodies are having immune-mediated reactions to the outer toxic environment that we're being exposed to that didn't exist like that before. And by the outer environment, I mean the food, the all the poisons and toxins in our environment, you know, things, sprays, pesticides. You know, there's great debate on genetically modified foods, and I'm of the belief from listening to the science about it that it does have tremendous impact on the body, the quality of the protein, everything like that. So our bodies are reacting, you know, and so we're seeing, in addition to being able to diagnose these things better, we're seeing an increased incidence of gastrointestinal and kidney problems. And the approach, reductionistic approach, is to do the conventional veterinary medical approach, and in many circles, low protein is the recommendation, and but they don't look at the quality of protein. In addition, there we don't have great treatments in Western medicine for kidneys or for liver or for GI, except to relieve the symptoms. Whereas when you create a more integrative approach, there are numerous traditional Chinese medical formulas, acupuncture, nutrition, food, that can help actually heal the body. And for example, you know, just quickly, 20 years ago, I was talking and lecturing about milk thistle, and that it's actually one of the few herbs that has been actually proven, documented to be of benefit in helping regenerate liver cells, hepatocytes. Well, back then they would say, oh, that's just hearsay and that's just this alternative approach. But now there's enough research that it is part of standard veterinary practice from veterinarians who are more open-minded, say, about liver disease, and they will incorporate milk thistle in the treatment. So now, the good news is it has many more veterinarians have opened up to integrating these complementary therapies.
Well, about, oh gosh, it's got to be 15 years ago, perhaps. It's amazing how time flies by, isn't it? But I had the privilege of speaking a couple of times at Cornell as a guest speaker and, you know, talking to the vet students, and I did two big presentations there, and I was really a little shocked and dismayed to find that at the end of those presentations, you know, students came up to me and they were like, we've never heard this before. And I'm, you know, again, I'm an educated layperson. I, you know, certainly I've worked hard in our world of trying to improve animal health, and I, you know, think that I have done my homework. But to be talking to vet students at arguably, you know, and I'm sure you'll agree, the top vet school in the country, certainly the top three, and them saying that they were receiving no nutritional education as part of their program for 4 years, it shocked me then, and it still shocks me now. What's the state of the veterinary education business, so to speak, Alan, in terms of bringing this more integrative approach, especially with nutrition, to the schools, to the vets, before they are released into the world to help our animals? Where do we stand with that?
Well, unfortunately, they're not in a great, great place. You know, when I was in vet school in the late 70s, our nutrition professor, who I dearly love, and he's a great, great individual, and he's brilliant, but he said, gosh, you guys are so busy with all your other courses. The nutrition course here, these different nutritional companies, which I won't mention particular names, but the main ones in the industry, have given us all the information we need. Just read this for your exam and you'll be okay. So there's an inherent conflict of interest in oftentimes where the information is provided by the nutrition companies that have a financial interest in the veterinarians recommending their diets.
Wow. Isn't that the
truth? Okay, so, you know, like with too much in the world, that simple statement, follow the money, unfortunately fits into that category as well. Number one. Number two is there's inherent conflict of interest these days in research. Back in the 70s, there still was funding for research that wasn't linked to a particular company where there was a financial interest in the outcome of the studies. These days, with the cuts in just research in every field, that most of the research funding is coming from the companies that have an inherent interest in the outcomes. And, you know, the New York Times did wonderful articles on that in human medicine on the drugs, that all the studies or most of the studies that were being done, there was an inherent conflict of interest because they were funded by the drug companies that wanted the drugs approved. So it's the same with nutrition, number one. Number two is, ideally, you would love to have double-blind studies on everything that we do. In it, realistically, it's so expensive. It costs a couple hundred thousand dollars to do double-blind placebo-controlled trials. So there's an inherent conflict of interest there where it's limited to only multi-million dollar industries that can afford those sort of studies. Yet, so what we need is, and it's starting to, in evidence-based medicine, we're opening that evidence is not just double-blind placebo-controlled trials, but that it's also clinical efficacy trials. What actually works?
Alan, and I had to stop you right there. We're up against the break again. I'm so sorry. We're prompted by our engineer here, what you're saying is so valuable, and I am just enjoying it so much. I just want to make sure that we were able to rebroadcast this through the formats that we do. So we'll be back in 1 minute, and I apologize for interrupting you because I'd love to just go on uninterrupted. But we'll be back in a minute on Clear Conscience Pet Radio. All Paul's Pet Talk Radio Network.
Treat your furry best friend with a Clear Conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. At clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat-treated to help retain all the natural, rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 33955. Put your pet on the path to good health.
People of the world, let's get together.
Welcome back to Clear Conscience Pet Radio, and we're on the All Paul's Pet Talk Radio Network, of course, and this is an afternoon to treasure because we are here with Dr. Alan Schoen, the founding father of holistic integrative veterinary medicine, and the things that Alan is sharing with us today are so valuable that really we could do a series and do a program, honestly, just with Alan's insights as the entire framework of the program. So welcome back, Alan.
Thank you, Anthony. Just to finish up that last thing, I don't know where nutrition is these days in the veterinary schools, but I think they've, you know, improved dramatically since over the last 30 years. And the reality is we need to realize that everyone is just trying to do their best and trying to do the best they can in getting veterinarians trained to be as competent as they can be in helping our animals heal.
Well, one thing people don't think about a lot is that a veterinarian is required to learn how to manage the health and surgery and anatomy aspects of several different animals to get through vet school, including large animals and small animals. No matter what you specialize in, you have to get that basic background. And you know, a human physician has to learn the human body. A veterinarian has to learn several different species. Isn't that the truth, Alan?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the challenges that the whole veterinary profession is confronting right now, is the whole thing of information overload. Because, you know, like when I was in vet school, you have large animal anatomy, small animal anatomy, large animal physiology, small, you know, everything is for individual species. And then if you wanted to do more specialized, like goat medicine, that was an elective course at 6 or 7 in the morning before your regular courses.
Good luck on that if you had a little bit of a good time the night before, right?
Right, right.
even at Cornell, the students do party a bit. So, but I think that speaks so much to the fact that, and I like what you just said, it's such a kind thing to say. You're saying the intent out there, I mean, the veterinarian that I'm referring to, for example, not by name or by region or any other thing, obviously wants to help this dog. This vet doesn't have anything but the best of intentions. I just think that what happens is that, you know, you're seeing, you know, dozens of patients a day, you know, in very much all different circumstances, and you got to go to the playbook and pull out a play and hand it over to the client to do with their animal. And I think that time factor is a huge thing, and the luxury of spending a lot of time with a patient, both in human and veterinary medicine, is something that has just become so difficult because of the fundamental structure and the economics of it all. And I think that's really hurts our ability to grow as a community in terms of animal care. Now, with Lyme disease, I think that was a really interesting thing to bring up because it's something that's on a lot of people's minds. And is Lyme the kind of a thing? Because I'm a big believer in the mind-body connection as well. So, you know, you're preaching to the choir with me on that. I believe in this particular instance, if this dog had Lyme's in his body and he experienced an emotional huge crash of the loss of a mate, which is what, you know, a two-dog family, generally speaking, those two dogs are very bonded together. And then his guardian, his human guardian, had to leave a few days after this happened. I mean, to me, it was just very evident that this animal crashed emotionally, which exposed the immune system to the reflare-up of the Lyme. Does that make any sense at all, or am I just talking, like, you know, hocus-pocus here?
No, I think you make quite a few really good points there. And just to go back for one second, the time thing is a big factor. And every veterinarian I know really wants to do what's best for their animal, you know, for the animals under their care.
Sure.
And that's the goal. And it is, there's the challenge of time, and it's much easier to prescribe a medication to do an accepted standard of practice rather than going into a whole holistic approach that is definitely more time consuming. Now, how that relates to, say, Lyme disease and the example that you gave about is there an emotional component? Lyme disease is a very, very complicated condition, disease, and I've actually published one of the first papers on it back 15 years ago in horses. And when I was being ridiculed, where people were saying horses don't get Lyme disease, and now that's pretty well accepted.
Uh-huh.
And but that what I was bringing up was the titers don't always reflect the, you know, what is showing up in the animal, okay? And how that relates to this dog, what I'll share with you is, you know, one of my old professors at Cornell used to say, do you believe the tests or do you believe the animal, you know?
Wow, that's profound.
Okay, and that's the thing is, you know, it's well documented. There's a certain percentage of laboratory error in tests. There's, and, you know, we need to look at the individual animal. And it's pretty well being recognized that there is definitely an emotional component to the health of our animals as well as us. You know, to any animal lover, it's like a duh moment. Hello? Of course, you know? And the I think that's very insightful what you're saying, and you see, I see that all the time, where the we live in multi-species families now in the United States, and the dogs are bonded, the people are bonded, and it's one big family. So when there's a loss, we often don't recognize the impact of that on the other animals in the family as well as the humans. And so that can indeed have an impact on the immune response. We show, it does show that depression, sadness, grief depresses the immune system, okay? And I, you know, I've seen that in some of my new books. I talked about it in my last book, Kindred Spirits, how the remarkable bonds between humans and animals can change the way we live. And I'm working on a new book, and I'm going into that more because there's a lot more science validating that. And, you know, for Lyme disease, the standard accepted protocol is an antibiotic. But a more integrative, holistic approach is, yeah, looking at the underlying causes of what precipitated a flare-up of Lyme in a chronic, in a case of chronic Lyme disease, and doing different things that to return the animal to the optimal state of health that it can be in. And that's both emotional, psycho-neuroimmunology is the field that that fits in, as well as doing things nutritionally, herbally, acupuncture, as well as the conventional medical approach to bring the animal back to the optimal state of health that it can be in.
Psychoneuroimmunology. That's,
yes,
that's right in itself. There's a whole program right there, isn't there?
Oh, for sure.
Now, I'd like to talk about, I know we're going to be coming up against a break again soon, and the clock is ruling us, unfortunately, a little bit. But I'd like to talk about, because we're talking about Lyme's, and that kind of brings us to the question of Lyme's vaccine, vaccines in general, where we've come in the thinking about vaccination of our animals. And I think that it's something that we've seen a huge sea change in this in the last, you know, 10 years, 20 years. But even in the last couple of years, I've seen more, you know, what I would call, I guess, the, you know, the next generation of folks who have not been exposed to this thinking before starting to become more aware that you don't need to vaccinate our animals for parvo every year or for lepto or bordetella or any of these, you know, kind of typical, kind of the big panel that we just jam into our dogs every year as part of their veterinary well visit. Now, you know, my family, you know, we've made the decision that we do titer testing for virtually every, you know, every pathogen that the vaccines are supposed to cover. You know, we do puppy vaccinations and try to leave it at that. But is that a valid approach if we do titer testing? I think Cornell is actually the place where our titer testing is evaluated when we send the blood away. Talk to us a little bit about that, and just be prepared that I might have to interrupt you about the difference between or the benefit of doing early vaccinations, but then doing titer testing, which assesses the immunity that remains in the animal's body from that original vaccination. I hope I made that clear. I hope that wasn't too...
Yes, Anthony, actually, you summarized that extremely well. That's my own belief system is initial vaccines judiciously and then monitor titers. To summarize it real quick, to give the listener something to go by, is you weigh the risk-benefit ratio of each vaccine suggestion. Okay, what is the risk of side effects? What is the risk of not vaccinating versus what are the benefits of the vaccine versus the benefits of monitoring with titers?
And all right, Alan, can we stop right there?
Okay.
And we'll come right back to the vaccines and the titers. I'm so sorry, but we were just waiting for that prompt. And this is really, really valuable. So we'll be back in 1 minute to get back to vaccines and titer testing on the All Paul's Pet Talk Radio Network, here with Anthony Benny on Clear Conscience Pet Radio with Alan Schoen.
Love for the human race, make it a better place.
I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great.
Is your dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. At Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
People of the world, let's get together.
Welcome back to Clear Conscience Pet Radio on the All Paul's Pet Talk Radio Network. And we are here with our very special guest, Dr. Alan Schoen. You can find Dr. Schoen at drschoen.com. That's drschoen.com. Please visit Alan's website because you'll learn a lot more than we can cover in a one-hour program with all the references, articles. Alan is a multi-published author, and I'd like to promote Alan's books because they're all wonderful. The most recent is Kindred Spirits, which subtitles How the Remarkable Bond Between Humans and Animals Can Change the Way We Live. And boy, doesn't that just say it all. And Alan also wrote a book that's considered one of the finest books ever written about this subject called Love, Miracles, and Animal Healing. All the books are available either through Alan's website or Amazon, as well as textbooks that Alan has contributed to that might be a little bit more specialized for, you know, for practitioners. But all of it is, talk about remarkable, is remarkable in terms of the new ground that Alan has really laid at every step of his career. So it's such a privilege to have him with us. So I'll stop yapping and bring Alan back. Alan, welcome back.
Thank you, Anthony. A joy to be with you.
Well, it's a privilege to have you with us, a huge one. Now, when we're talking about the vaccinations, I think that I'd like to just leave people with a recommendation and see if you agree with it, which is to ask your veterinarian. And I always tell people, ask your veterinarian the next time you're going to set up your visit, because usually you get that little card in the mail to remind you it's time to bring your animal in. And I think it's a great practice within the practice of veterinary medicine to do these well visits and the yearly contact with your animal and the veterinarian. It's a great way to spot things before they get worse, especially things like cysts and growths and just a general kind of checkup with, do some urine and maybe some basic blood work. But ask your veterinarian, do I need to get these vaccinations again, or do you offer titer testing? Any vet that doesn't these days, I would be a little surprised, and it would worry me a bit, to be honest with you. But they won't. A lot of the veterinarians, I'm sorry to say, Alan, don't offer you that option because it's just a big explanation that they don't want to have to get into unless they're really true, committed, integrative practitioners. But if you ask your conventional or your more conventional practitioner, most of them will be able to hook you up with this. Is that your experience as well, Alan?
Yes, I think it's one of those situations where more and more veterinarians are becoming aware of that risk-benefit ratio. And a lot of that has to do with it's being brought up more at the veterinary conferences and by the veterinary associations, acknowledging that there is a risk-benefit ratio for each thing. And I have to say, I give most credit to that to the dog breeders, you know, the various breeder associations, because they were the ones who really spearheaded that movement. And but now, again, you know, kudos to veterinary medicine that they've, through the veterinary associations, veterinary conferences, they have recognized, okay, these things may not be absolutely necessary every year in every animal, and that titers are appropriate. It's not that different than, you know, years ago, we used to get a tetanus shot, and they wanted it every year, and then they extended it to every 3 years, and then to every 5 years, and then they found, oh, tetanus lasts, actually only needed to give it every 10 years. So as the awareness improves, and as we start recognizing from titers and everything that, oh, these vaccines may last longer and be protective, that there's, you know, we can modify the schedules to the individual animals. The challenge with that is there's still debate about what the titer means as far as how protective it is, and that discussion is still in the veterinary field. What do the titers actually mean?
Right, right. Are they really showing that that animal has a strong immunity, or are they just reflecting that there are antibodies in the system that can be identified, but, you know,
right.
But are they at the level to prevent disease?
Right, so that still is unfolding, and that still needs to be part of the awareness. You know, and that's where I say risk-benefit ratio. What are the risks, the side effects of annual vaccines, of giving so many vaccines? When it was just one or two, it wasn't that much of an issue. But now that there's so many vaccines, what does that do to the immune system? There's a term that I like to use that's used somewhat in human medicine, not used that much in veterinary medicine, called immune dysregulation. And again, our immune system is being bombarded with so many different challenges that what I see is there's a lot of diseases that manifest are actually a result of a foundational immune dysregulation.
That makes a lot of sense, because what we're doing is we're assaulting the system, not only environmentally, as you mentioned earlier, environmental toxins, impurities in food, which makes these food choices so important, and you know, the combination of that with the actual diseases themselves, which we know exist out there. I mean, these organisms are there. These pathogens are in the environment. Dogs catch them. Dogs give them to each other. So there's a real need to prevent our dogs from being affected by these. But what we seem to have found is that a dog that's healthy, who's getting good nutrition, and who has been vaccinated properly, will maintain their immunity for a really good long time. So I think that the best recommendation we could leave with people is engage your vet in this discussion. Don't be shy. I think that the big problem we have is people are so afraid to ask questions. They feel stupid. You know, hey, look, I'm doing this for 23 years, and I can feel awkward if I'm in front of a vet all of a sudden. You know, the roles change very quickly. I'm not the animal nutritionist. I'm the guy in the office, and this vet has my animal's life in their hands. So,
right,
you know,
the reality is there's no black and white. And what we like to see is black and white answers. And so much of healthcare is in this gray region.
Yes, we don't have yes or no. It's well,
right.
What if?
Yeah. And again, risk-benefit ratios and what if.
Well, now, when it comes to the aspect of nutrition, because it just seems to, you know, obviously I'm biased because it's the main thing that I do in the world of animal care is the nutrition part of it. But it just seems to me so many times that when I find out an animal's not doing well, that I find out that they're not eating well. And it's just, you know, it's disconcerting on the one hand, but on the other hand, it means that I can help someone. So that's very gratifying for me. I can improve their situation pretty dramatically just by getting them on better food. This is going to be a zinger here, and we've got a minute or a minute and a half before our last break, before our last segment. How do you feel about dry food as the sum and total of the diet for a dog or cat?
Okay, well, again, I'll sum it up very, very quickly. Is the bottom line is it's amazing how going on good quality food transforms an animal's health. And that is the foundation. Oftentimes, I'll say, before we change anything else, let's change the diet and see what that does. Okay? There's a place for everything. So what I try to do is match the animal's diet with what is practical for the individual person and their lifestyle and for the animal's lifestyle. So I put them on a scale of 1 to 10, okay? 10 is a homemade, the best is a homemade or organic balanced diet. 0 is the worst generic kibble that you could ever buy, okay? And everything else falls in between that.
And that's very well put. You know, there is so much that we could talk about, and that we have just kind of really opened a bunch of like chapters of books and kind of just read the first paragraph. And I mean, I think that, you know, what we've discovered here today, which I expected to happen, is that there's so much that we could delve into to try to help people, which is what we're trying to do, try to help people to help their animals, that I think that we're absolutely going to have to, you bring you back on a periodic basis and maybe just zero in on a topic and dig in deeper, because I really would love to have the opportunity to have more depth. This hour has gone by so ridiculously quickly, I can't even imagine. So the thing that I want to leave everyone with is that Dr. Schoen is someone whose knowledge and whose exploration has brought so much to so many of us who love animals, and so many folks, practitioners, not only veterinarians, but acupuncturists and holistic, therapists who do other kinds of modalities that are not even veterinarians have learned from this research. And I think that what we need to do is just to say thank you so much, Dr. Alan Schoen, for being who you are and for having really made the pivotal leaps that you did at a time when nobody else was getting there. And, you know, sometimes it just takes a single person to change the world. And I think you're one of those people, Alan. So I want to thank you so much for being here with us. And you have to promise me that you're going to do this again with us sometime. I don't feel like we really got deeply enough into anything that we discussed, but I think we have a good introduction. And I hope that folks will contact us if they have any questions. And we'll schedule you to come back at your earliest convenience. We know how busy you are. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and for all of our listeners as well. Thank you for being here on Clear Conscience Pet Radio today.
Well, thank you so much for your kind words, Anthony, and for having me on. And the main thing I would say is may every thought, every feeling, everything in our hearts, our minds be a blessing to all beings, because that's where it all comes from.
Well, that's a beautiful ending. And again, I feel that we have just not even really gotten started. So I apologize if you feel as if you didn't get enough time to explain some of your concepts, but we're going to do this again. And I want to thank you, and I want to thank especially anyone who's taken the time to listen to us, because you're what makes the program work. And thank you for being out there. Thank you for listening to Clear Conscience Pet Radio on the All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. And we will talk to you next week on Clear Conscience Pet Radio. Thank you, Dr. Schoen.